Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
All right, so let's talk about the weekend. An amazing weekend. Endgame. Game of Thrones. Game one of the Rockets Warriors. It was all happening. All the time. That weekend was, in a word, lit.
It's lit. It's lit.
It is lit. It was lit. It's still lit.
It's lit.
The last weekend in April was the one that the entire world had been looking forward to for months. Iron Man, the Night King, the Durantula. That's a hell of a trio right there. And then, of course, you had Game 1, Rockets and Warriors, the series we've all been waiting on. And you probably thought Game 1 was going to be about Durant, Harden, Curry. Instead, the biggest games, or the biggest stars of that game, hell, the biggest stars of the entire weekend were none other than Kirkland, Zarba, and Tiven. As always, if you notice the referees, that's a problem. If you know their last names, that's a huge problem. And they were a huge problem yesterday. And I will get to those three in a second. Because try as they might, I can't let the referees lead the show on the Monday after a weekend like that. So why don't we start with the game first? Because lost in all the talk about the refs is the fact that Golden State did win that game. Golden State, in fact, won that game 104-100. Golden State did, in fact, take a 1-0 lead. And all of that does count, no matter how hard it was to watch. Now, normally, I would say a four-point game with multiple technicals and an ejection was an awesome game. Except Rockets-Warriors game one was not an awesome game. In fact, it was pretty ugly. And for the Rockets, it was painful. It was gutting. Because if there was a game for the Rockets to steal, it was that game. Game one in Oakland. Remember, the Rockets had been posted up there for quite some time. They came in rested. They had been off since Wednesday night. Golden State, though, played Friday night. They had to fly back. Then they had a 12:30 Pacific tip. Steph Curry was not right physically. Neither was Klay Thompson. And while the Warriors looked very unlike the Warriors in the first round, the Rockets pretty much were who we thought they were. In fact, the Rockets were better. The Rockets looked like their best selves. They wanted that matchup. They wanted it badly, and they didn't try to hide that fact from anybody. And they got it. But they would tell you the refs stole it. But it was not just the refs who ripped that game from them. All right, let's be real about this. Kevin Durant had a game in that, or a hand in that. After going for 50 in Game 6 Friday night, Durant comes right back with 35 yesterday. But it felt like even more than that. No wonder Steve Kerr was hyping him after the game. Kerr said, quote, "Kevin's run these last couple of weeks has just been off the charts. I've said it a few times this week. He is the most skilled basketball player on the earth. He's one of the most skilled basketball players to ever play the game." End quote. He said it a few times this week because Durant has shown it a few times this week. He's shown that when he wants to score, there is nobody who can do a damn thing about that. You can't stop this guy. I've said it before. Let me say it again right now. He's a 7-footer with the mobility and the handle and the jumper of a 6-footer. And pretty much that bleep just ain't fair.
Pass inside the green. Shot clock winding down. Durant. Got it.
This guy can do anything, including get to the rack.
49% in the first round. Durant to the basket.
Not only get to the basket, but defend the basket.
1 point game. Hard, nice little fake. Gets past Iguodala. Scoop blocked by Durant. You're worried about the lob, but you also...
And then how about that 1-footer? A 1-footer in a 1 point game.
1-footer. That's good. 31.
So that's Kevin Durant doing it on both ends. And they needed every bit of that because, well, Durant was locked in. And Draymond Green was pretty much doing everything. Steph was struggling. Struggling with his shot, struggling with his fouls, generally struggling until this with under 30 seconds to go.
Curry crossover, three-pointer, bang!
Freaking dagger. Man, that is a stone-cold assassin we're talking about right there. Steph's not having a good game. In fact, he was having a pretty lousy game. Can't get anything going, but when it matters, he gets the switch that he wants on Nene. He gets the matchup that he wants with Nene. He buries the shot on top of Nene. Run that back again, because you knew the moment Curry got that ball, what was coming. So did Curry, and so did Nene. And there was nothing that he could do to stop it.
Curry, crossover, three-pointer.
Man's game.
Bang!
Yeah, I love Steph. I'll say that for the record. I think he's one of the most humble, likable superstars you'll ever see. I could understand where some of you might not like him. You know, drops the shot, then drops the shimmy, drops a man's game right before he lets it rip.
Man's game.
And again, for Houston, man, that is so brutal. And again, we will get to the refs in a second. But the Rockets essentially fought their asses off in that game. They had a chance to rip it. They had a chance to rip the home court. And instead, the Dubs go right into their chest and rip their heart out. For Curry to hit that shot on a bad ankle with foul trouble and shooting trouble less than 48 hours after the last game was massive. That's what superstars do in superstar moments. Now, you lose that game and Golden State's in trouble. Like, legitimate trouble. Not getting stretched to six in the first round trouble. Serious trouble. Legitimate trouble. Like, the run could be over trouble if they lose that game. And here's why I say that. They'd be tired. They'd be gassed. They'd be banged up. They would have lost the home court, and they'd be down 1-0 to a fired-up Rockets team that's been lying in wait and waiting on them. Now, they're still tired. But tired and up 1-0 feels a hell of a lot better than tired and down 1-0, knowing that you have to win at least one game in Houston to win that series. And the Rockets are pissed. The question is this. Do they have a right to be? Did the refs rip that from them or not? You know, generally, I'm the first guy to say, scoreboard, look up at it. This might be the one time I don't say that. But I want to get into all of this a little bit later on. In the meantime, you probably have your own thoughts, so hit me up. 1-800-636-8686. I know this much. You never want the refs to be the focus on a late play, late in a game in the playoffs. Much less be the focus the entire game in the playoffs. Much less be the focus of the entire series in the playoffs, especially that series. Jason, Lock and Fora. Jason, what's up? How are you?
What's going on, buddy? As you know, that was the pinnacle, and it's been all downhill since then. That first appearance was it, man.
My man, I appreciate you
we'll
saying
it. We'll always have that, Jim.
We always will. No matter what they do to us, they can't take that from us, brother. They cannot.
They'll try.
They cannot.
But
out of my
can.
Dead cold hands. Don't
there
do it.
Go.
All right, JLC, the draft is finally over, so let's take a quick look back. Was there ever any doubt in your mind that Arizona was going to take Kyler Murray with the number one pick overall?
Nope. No, there wasn't. And I'm hardly alone in that reporting and in that conclusion. It was the worst-kept secret in the NFL. It wasn't a kept secret. It was obvious. It was overt. They can talk about a process all they want. This was the die was cast on this with the hiring of Cliff Kingsbury, and it was punctuated with, you know, Kyler Murray not coming in at, you know, 5'8" and a smidge or whatever. From the combine on, I don't know how many columns I wrote about this, but it was certainly more than 4 and maybe less than 10, but it was quite a few. Kyler Murray was going to the Arizona Cardinals. Dan Snyder was infatuated by Dwayne Haskins, and whether through trading up or whatever, that was his guy. Dave Gettleman was in love with Daniel Jones. He said it himself since the Senior Bowl. That was pretty widely known. And Drew Lock was the apple of John Elway's eye. It was just a matter of will he have to trade up into the late first round to get him or not. And all of that held true.
Jason Lockenfora joining us. All right, so what about Josh Rosen? What do you make of the trade the Dolphins made to acquire him?
I love it. Whether it works or not, if you're an organization like this that is clearly taking the long view and is about asset procurement and player development and finding value, getting the 10th overall pick 12 months later for pick 62 strikes me as value. And picking up an extra 2 in the process through the trade down with the Saints is supreme value. I don't know about the nucleus around him this year, and I think he's going to take his lumps again. But they'll get to know him as a person. They'll see his practice habits. They'll see how he picks up this system. I think he'll pick it up pretty quickly. And they'll be able to decide if he is worth cultivating as the long-term face of the franchise. And if not, you're going to be able to trade a 23-year-old Josh Rosen for a mid-round pick at least. And you're probably only going to win 4 to 6 games with him anyway. So you'll be in position. That might be high. You'll be in position to take a quarterback next year. And if by chance this kid is a player, then think about next year if it is a 4 or 5 quarterback draft and if it is Tua and Herbert up top and you have one of those picks and you can trade out of it for a king's ransom after getting your guy at 62, I will sign up for that 8 days a week. Give me that all day long. They get a real blue chipper in Wilkins at 13. I like what they're doing. If Stephen Ross can leave these guys alone and commit to losing for a couple of years, they could be the next Cleveland Browns, say, in 2021, where you turn the corner, and when you finally turn it, brother, you're not looking back.
I was about to say, Jason, I can't believe that I'm about to say this, but I like what the Dolphins are doing. I like it a lot. As a pro at keeping you clones in line and interviewing the right people in sports, here is some simple advice that can help all of you. When you're looking for pro tips on vehicle maintenance or repair, look no further than O'Reilly Auto Parts. Whether it comes to replacing your battery, getting advice on proper car maintenance, or even just getting the best bang for your buck, their expert team can help you out every step of the way. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Jason Lock informed my guest. Now, back in 2015, a sports writer wrote a piece on Washington's quarterback situation and made the prediction, JLC, that if Robert Griffin III did not work out, right, they would be drafting another quarterback within 5 years. You know where I'm going with this. Who was that sports writer?
That was Dwayne Haskins.
Right.
And he was writing for the Bullis School paper there, a prep school in the D.C. area. And chances are that made it, that made its way to Dan Snyder because he had kids at the school at the same time. Dwayne Haskins' mentor is a buddy of mine, Sean Springs, former All-Pro corner who played for the Redskins and who mentored Haskins and sort of helped guide him from where he was in New Jersey playing against kind of lesser talent to getting him to the DMV, as we call it. I guess I need to explain the district, Maryland and Virginia, the DMV as we call it in this area, to go up against some defensive backs who would be playing on Sundays one day. This Dwayne Haskins was not a mystery to Dan Snyder and Bruce Allen. And when you're talking about macro-level Washington Redskins decisions like that, those are the only two names that really matter.
All right, so what do you make of that fit for him and for the team?
I mean, I love it. I also like that young man a lot, so I'm a little fearful because, we can take it back to, Heath Shuler or however far you want to go back. History has not been kind to Washington Redskins quarterbacks, at least the last 20-odd years, and no one has really been able to, become that 10-year face of the franchise guy. Even Cousins, all the money they paid him, he started there for, 2-3 years, and then he's gone. So hopefully they can build an infrastructure around him. I really like their draft. If people don't meddle and leave some things alone, I think they have the ability, if their front seven stays healthy, to be beastly on that side of the ball. And they should be able to run the football a little bit. And hopefully Haskins doesn't have to do too much too soon. But to get him at 15, 50 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, playing against the best, college teams in the land. I think the kid has a real chance to be a stud.
Sign me up for that. Jason, looking forward to joining us for another moment or so. Jason, on Thursday, a TV station in Kansas City released audio reportedly of a conversation between Tyreek Hill and his fiancée. It includes a conversation about Hill allegedly hitting their 3-year-old son, Hill making a threat to his fiancée. What do you make of how the team has handled this, and what do you expect the league to do when it comes to Hill?
I'm writing a column on it, actually, right now. The Kansas City Chiefs have a domestic violence problem, and I shouldn't say the Kansas City Chiefs. It's the owner, Clark Hunt, because you can go back to December 1st, 2012, when Jovan Belcher kills his girlfriend, Cassandra Perkins, age 22, and then goes to the facility, kneels behind a car, and blows his brains out. From that point on, the Kansas City Chiefs have continually had an open-door policy for individuals with history of abuse, right up through the decision last Friday to have a press conference welcoming Frank Clark, who was arrested for domestic violence in college and kicked off his team. Within hours of that tape you're just referencing coming out regarding Hill, a player they drafted, despite him being kicked off his college team and arrested for assault, when at that time his girlfriend was pregnant. And according to police, he punched her in the face, punched her in the stomach, and choked her. And he was sentenced. And so what do I expect the Chiefs to do? Keep playing, man. Roll out the footballs. And, hey, somebody in next year's draft, if he's got a history of abuse, but we think there's value in the fifth round, come on down. I mean, that's what their actions show me. That's who they are. That's what Clark Hunt is. You can't say Kansas City Chiefs, because a lot of things have changed the last 7 years. The constant is the owner. Different coaches, different personnel people. Those individuals with those sorts of records don't get in NFL buildings unless owners sign off on it. They don't get cut unless owners sign off on it. They don't get $103 million in free agency unless the owner signs off on it. So what do I expect them to do? I guess keep doing what they're doing. In the meantime, at some point this week, he'll probably end up on the commissioner's exempt list. But the fact that it got to this point, to me, it's quite telling.
Jason LaCanfora is an NFL insider for CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. I concur, by the way. He also appears every Sunday on the NFL Today on CBS. He is host of Be More Opinionated podcast. Jason LaCanfora, JLC, appreciate you very much. Great to have you back,
brother. Have a good one.
Listen, I understand it can be frustrating, especially if you're in a big hurry or you're running late. You know, you find yourself stuck at a railway crossing and you're waiting for a train. The signals are going, the train's not even there, so you're feeling like this is not a problem. I can sneak across the tracks. Don't do it, ever. Trains are going a whole lot faster than you expect them to be, and they can't stop. Even if the engineer hits the brakes right away, it could take a train over 1 mile to stop. Did you know that? And by that time, what used to be your car is just a crushed hunk of metal. And what used to be you, well, better that we not go there. You can't know how quickly the train is going to arrive. The train can't stop, even if it does see you. The result is a disaster. If the signals are on, the train is on its way. And you just need to remember one thing. Trains cannot stop. You need to, because they can't. The draft is now over, and it's time to give out some grades, because I'm all about that life. Why don't we start with the Arizona Cardinals? They made 11 selections, so what I'm going to do is give each pick a number grade, and then I'm going to divide that by the number of selections, and then I'm going to convert that to a letter grade. Ready? The hell I am. You know what a horrible idea that would be. However, that said, I will give out a few grades. Like an F to Giants GM Dave Gettleman. And not even so much for his pick of Daniel Jones, but for continuing to defend his pick of Daniel Jones. More accurately, for how he is defending his pick of Daniel Jones. That Thursday night presser was a mess, and it has not gotten any better since. He told Peter King, quote, "I was at my bagel shop this morning. Guy said to me, Dave, great pick." End quote. Was he talking about Dan Jones, or was he talking about the everything bagel? Hey-o. Hey, listen, whatever, right? As long as some random, anonymous, and definitely not made-up guy at a bagel shop said it was a good pick, then it must have been, right? And if that does not fire you up, Giants fans, there's always this line from DG, quote, "In 3 years, we'll find out how crazy I am," end quote. So really quickly, to recap his justifications for taking Daniel Jones where he did, there is that thing about how he could get hit by a car, so nobody knows anything. There is that thing about that guy at the bagel shop who said it was a great pick. And then there's the, "In 3 years, we'll find out how crazy I am." Yo, my guy, do you realize that you sound kind of crazy right now? We don't need to wait. That said, DG does not get the biggest F from the weekend. Neither does John Elway, who told Peter King that he thinks that Joe Flacco is, quote, a guy coming into his prime, end quote. What? Hey, John.
Hey, John.
He's 34.
34.
He lost his gig to a rookie, but he's coming into his prime. Hey, look, I know you have to sell that trade even harder now that you just drafted another quarterback, but that feels like a gigantic stretch. But even that bizarre statement is not the biggest F of the NFL weekend. Now, you want the biggest F? The biggest F, that honor goes to some sports book in Las Vegas that is saying that the Cleveland Browns are a minus 120 favorite to miss the postseason. Now, I'm not going to mention that sports book by name for two reasons. Either they're trolling for pub or they made a colossal mistake and this is just going to be really embarrassing for them. Either way, I'm going to help them protect their reputation. They clearly do not care about that rep if they're running around with that kind of slander. They don't care, but I do. The Cleveland Browns not making the playoffs. What the hell are you talking about? Is Dave Gettleman setting those odds? I know that the people who set these lines have forgotten more about sports betting than I will ever know. Believe me, I know. I tried a sports bet. It never goes well for me. I also know that there are gigantic buildings in Las Vegas for a reason. But saying that the Browns are going to miss the playoffs is ridiculous. In fact, it's worse than ridiculous. It's offensive. It's disgraceful. You do not come at the Browns like that and expect that to go unchecked. It's not just stupid. It's hateful. Man, it's idiotic. It's monstrous. It's monstrously idiotic. And don't try to come in here and tell me it's because the Steelers and the Ravens both have had great drafts and they've got a history of winning divisions and making the playoffs. Because I know all that. I'll tell you what else I know. I know the Cleveland Browns are America's team. I know that. Do you know that? Yes, the AFC North is a nasty division. The Steelers and the Ravens have taken turns dominating it. I know that. But do you know about Baker Mayfield? Do you know about Juice Landry? Do you know about Odell Beckham Jr.? Does the name Freddie Kitchens mean anything at all to you? Saying that the Cleveland Browns will not make the playoffs is not an opinion. It's a reason to go. You come for the Browns, you're coming for us. You're coming for me because the Browns are family. This list of reasons to go includes if somebody insults your family or your faith or they spit in your face. And you, Las Vegas sportsbook that I will not mention by name. You've done all of that by saying that the Browns will not make the playoffs. When you say that, you are insulting my family and my faith, and you are spitting in my face. It's a reason to go. Lucky for you, I'm not a violent dude. I'm a man of peace. Otherwise, I'd be on the next thing smoking, and my two fists would be doing the talking, and they don't really like to talk very much. Listen, I'm just not here for your justifications. I'm not going to get into the fact that Pittsburgh is down two All-Pros from 2 years ago and that the league will have had an entire offseason to study Lamar Jackson and the Ravens' running game. I'm not going to get into the personnel moves and the transactions of every team in that division because to do that would be to dignify this sportsbook's insanity. I'm not doing that. I will not do it. I'm not going to do it for them. I'm not going to do it for me. I won't do it for you. And more importantly, I will not do it for Cleveland. So here's the deal, sportsbook. Take the line down. Take the line down and apologize. Apologize to the city of Cleveland, the Browns fans, and then apologize to me. Because you didn't just make a line. You crossed a freaking line. And the only way the Browns do not make the playoffs this year is if there aren't playoffs this year. If they just cancel the playoffs and they give the Vince Lombardi trophy to the Browns at the end of the regular season, this is the only way the Cleveland Browns do not make the playoffs. Ben Golliver is my guest. Good to have you back, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. Hey, I'm sure you want to talk about NBA officiating here. You know, it's been a big dramatic situation, but I understand you've got Joey Crawford now on your new crew. Is he your new crew member?
My man. Well done. Well played. Yeah, Joe is the new guy. I can't wait to introduce him to the audience. Actually, Ben, the thing is, and nicely done by you, no, I don't want to talk about refereeing. I never want to talk about refereeing, except the thing is, that was the only thing the Rockets wanted to talk about after that game, so I guess we will talk about the refs. What do you make of how the refs showed up in game one of that series? What are your thoughts?
Well, let's give them a raise, man. I don't know if I could handle all that yelling, really from all sides. I understand the frustration. I understand the Rockets really wanting to dig into the nitty-gritty details on some of these calls and say, you know, we've got these landing zones, Harden, we don't want him injured and all this. But I really think they got away from the big picture. And I think the big picture that we learned here from the last week was that composure matters so much in the playoffs. You look at Damian Lillard versus Russell Westbrook, which one of those two guys kept a level head throughout that series and who went home, you know, in a losing fashion. Obviously, Lillard, by delivering that three-pointer, showed that, you know, he was cool, calm, and collected in the moment. You look at that San Antonio Spurs series against Denver. They completely blanked out in the last 10 seconds of Game 7, the San Antonio Spurs did. That's why they went home. You can kind of go on down the list. I mean, there's been other examples of teams just not keeping themselves together. And to me, that was the situation with the Rockets. They get the technicals for arguing the call. They're in a one-possession game the whole way. They did a pretty nice job, despite missing a lot of three-pointers, of hanging tough with the Golden State Warriors, of being able to just kind of grind out enough points to keep it close. And unfortunately, again, in the closing seconds of that game, Chris Paul loses his cool, gets ejected, and sort of that's that. And then afterwards, they make a huge production in the post-game press conferences. I understand trying to work the refs, trying to spin narratives, trying to protect your guy in James Harden, but I just think they wound up getting so consumed with this referee conversation that they maybe didn't live up to their full capabilities in game one. And to me, I just don't think a persecution complex like they're displaying after that game is the path towards an NBA championship.
Ben Golliver joining us. You know, I haven't laid out my thoughts on that completely, but I really do agree with what you just said. And I'm just going to pose this question. I agree with what you said, but is that how the slide under and safe landing spot rules have been officiated all year long, or did it feel a little bit different yesterday?
You know, to me, there was a couple of cases where he definitely deserved fouls, you know, but I think that we can't lump all of these different examples in together and say, hey, they're all the same, because, you know, the angle that Harden's launching on some of them is different than others, how far underneath other guys are coming. And to me, the big difference between what the Warriors were doing yesterday and maybe that Zaza foul is that the Warriors were making legitimate efforts to contest his shots. You know, they were definitely getting very close and staying tightly pressed on him, which I'm sure is one of their defensive principles of, you know, don't give this guy any room to work. But they were also, you know, they had like a point to what they were doing. The issue with Zaza and when this foul became such a big deal a few years ago is that it was just sort of this reckless, clumsy closeout where he wasn't really making a good play on the ball, and he winds up putting Kawhi Leonard in a situation where injury was pretty, pretty clear cut. To me, that's not totally what was happening with the game one examples from yesterday. And that's why I thought maybe some of their complaints were a little overblown. But again, it's a matter of how do you address these things? Do you, you know, calmly talk to the refs? Do you plant the seeds, or do you kind of go nuclear? And to me, it seemed like they went nuclear, not only during the game, but also after the games as well. And I just wonder, you know, referees are human. They don't like to be shown up. And we saw the referees get really upset with the Golden State Warriors, actually, when the Warriors showed them up in a game a few weeks ago when they were playing against the Minnesota Timberwolves. You'll remember Steph was like running all over the court and pointing at them, and they were, you know, calling the referee out by name in the post-game press conferences there. To me, that really backfired. I think that's a dumb strategy. I think it's a really easy way to, you know, make other referees kind of rally around their colleagues and just say, you know what, if you're going to treat us like that, you know, what do we owe you? And to me, I don't think it's very productive in the long run to approach it that way.
All right, so what about that then, Ben? Having said all that, how do you think game two is going to be officiated, and how much do you think that's going to impact that game?
Yeah, it's so tough to predict that. I mean, I just hope the Rockets come out with a better focus. I'll leave it at that. I mean, I think it's really on them to say, hey, we made our point as loudly and passionately as we can make it in game one, and now we have to go play basketball. If you're out there chasing fouls, you know, kind of trying to throw your hip into guys when you're shooting jumpers, you know, that is a good way to get distracted. And when I look at Houston's defense, I mean, they were playing really, you know, aggressive, physical, combative defense throughout that game too. And it's one of these situations where if you really break down the tape during an intense playoff game, you can find a foul on almost every single play. And so, to me, when the disparity was as close as it was there, I mean, I think Golden State was called for a few more fouls than Houston was, but it wasn't one of these situations where one team's parading to the free throw line and the other team isn't. To me, I think you just need to get back and focus on basketball. And I really hope the Rockets can do that, by the way, because they have a real chance in this series. Golden State has looked vulnerable at times during this postseason. Kevin Durant has been absolutely spectacular, but Steph Curry has been really hit or miss. And to me, that is the opportunity here for the Houston Rockets. Take advantage of, you know, the Steph that, you know, has been there some nights and hasn't been there other nights. And, you know, try to get your revenge from last year. Don't make it all about the stripes.
Ben Golver joining us. All right, so lost in all this talk about the Rockets and the Warriors and the refs was the fact that Boston put an absolute beating on Milwaukee yesterday. What do you make of how Brad Stevens, now Horford, dealt with Giannis?
Man, it was the Giannis rules. I mean, I'm sure you remember the Jordan rules back in the 80s where, like, Detroit comes up with this whole scheme to just kind of lock up Michael Jordan. And that's basically what Brad Stevens has done. I mean, he looks at Giannis and he says, this guy's a monster. You know, he's got so few flaws in his game, but we've got to exploit the flaws that he does have. And right now, Giannis still, it doesn't have that knockdown jump shot. He's not a shooter like a Kevin Durant or a Kawhi Leonard. And his passing ability is good, but it's not great. And so what they did is they just walled the paint off from him. They said, look, if you want to shoot the mid-range jumper, okay, we'll live with that. If you get towards the basket, we're going to have at least one body, if not two, on you. And then if you try to do moves in the paint, we're going to be collapsing and diving on you and just trying to make your life miserable. And they also did a really nice job of not telegraphing when they were going to help. So in other words, when Giannis is going towards the basket, there's a little delay there when the other guys are coming to him. That prevents Giannis from seeing his wide-open passing targets, and it really made him think. You can see he was getting in his own head a little bit, and that's not something that's happened very often for him this season. And you could tell by the end of the game, he was feeling pretty frustrated. It wasn't like he was losing his composure, like yelling and screaming, but he was just thinking and really overthinking at times. I thought it was a brilliant game one performance by the Celtics. I didn't necessarily see it coming, and I think if you're the Bucks, man, you have a lot of adjustments you've got to make, and it really starts with Giannis when you're going in there to game two.
Ben Golliver joining us. All right, another game one is coming up tonight. You've got Portland and Denver. But before we get into that, as an Oregon native and somebody who knows that Blazer fan base really well, what do you make of Damian Lillard's performance in the first round and, in particular, the 50-piece series winner?
It all came together perfectly. I mean, I remember that shot he made in 2014 where he sends the Rockets off. You know, at the buzzer, I never thought I would see a shot better than that, you know, by a Blazers player in the franchise's history. And 5 years later, he delivers one that's just definitely better in basically every regard. I mean, it's a much higher degree of difficulty, much further out. It's coming against sort of a major rival there. And after a very tense series kind of back and forth between him and Westbrook. And then to top it all off, I mean, the wave was one of the most iconic celebrations you're going to see. In terms of like a shot in the first round, that's about as good as it gets, you know, in NBA history. I mean, it's a short list to even kind of compare things. It meant a lot to that franchise for two reasons, though, Jim. One, obviously, Yusuf Nurkic's injury. I mean, that seemed like a devastating blow at the time. It's a great example of Lillard's leadership and composure to pull that team through that injury, have them ready to go in the postseason, find ways to, you know, make his replacement, Enes Kanter, become a functional player in that series. That was something I never saw coming. I mean, he so often gets exploited during the playoffs, and he just wasn't in that series. But the other factor is Paul Allen. I mean, this is a guy who supported that franchise for decades. He winds up passing away, you know, at the start of the season, essentially. And you have that kind of hanging over this franchise again, and his impact and his legacy to have it sort of fulfilled with a shot like that in a moment like that. It was really special for the Blazers fans.
Damian Lillard's an unbelievable leader, great, great player. Ben Golliver is a national NBA writer for the Washington Post. He's the co-host of the Open Floor podcast, and as you know by now, a jungle legend. Ben, thanks so much. Really good to have you back.
All right, welcome, Joey. Tell Joey good job on his first day.
I have been wearing Johnny O shirts now for a few weeks, and let me tell you something. They are amazing. They look great. They feel great. And best of all, they've got that patented tweener button. The tweener button. It's a hidden button between the second and third button, which is featured on all Johnny O shirts. I use it every single time. The tweener button is the first patented button to make sure that you're not too buttoned up and you're not too unbuttoned. And the hidden button solves that age-old second button dilemma. In other words, should you button one or should you button two? Now you know. Every Johnny O shirt comes with their patented tweener button, so you're always going to look just right. It is a total game changer. And keep this in mind. You can use the promo code ROME and get 20% off your first order at johnny-o.com at checkout. That's through May 30th. That's 20% off the regular price button-ups, which come in a range of fabrics, patterns, and styles. And shipping is free for orders over $85. Once again, johnny-o.com, promo code ROME, and get 20% off your first order, free shipping on orders over $85. Johnny-O.com for your tweener shirt at 20% off, and then check out the wide selection of shirts and other products ranging from polos to shorts, pants, swim, and more. Again, Johnny-O.com. Now, before I continue, let me throw out the obligatory and socially responsible spoiler alert disclaimer. You all know what I'm about to talk about, and if you have not seen it yet, now would be a very good time to throw on a set of earmuffs or just dial it down for about a minute. Everybody ready? Y'all good? Are you ready? Are you sure? All right then. You've been warned. Don't come at me. Don't at me. Here we go. Sebastian Powell Janikowski is retiring.
Bye, bye, little Sebastian. Miss you.
Let me tell you something. That is way more significant than some Night King getting daggered in the chest to close out a 40-minute, $90 million battle scene shot in the dark that nobody could see or make out on even the highest resolution TV. No, because this is real life. And in the Game of Kicks universe, we just lost an icon. The man, the myth, the legend, the Polish cannon. Done after 19 seasons, according to a tweet from Adam Schefter that rocked the world. Seabass told ESPN that he does not think his 41-year-old body can take the rigors of kicking in the NFL any longer. In other words, he does not want to slam that Play-Doh frame of his into the sausage casing of a Seahawks gamer ever again. And hard to blame him, right? Either he put on a half a bill between 2017 and 2018, or the Seahawks do not have a jersey within three sizes of Seabass's measurements. Either way, the Bass is calling it a day. And he walks off as the richest kicker ever, top 10 in points all time, a first-round draft pick, and most importantly, the only guy not in a video game to ever attempt a 76-yard field goal.
Wait a minute, he's bringing Janikowski out.
Okay, there we go.
Hey, hold on. Let's start to do the math on this. This would be 76 yards. This wouldn't only be the all-time record.
The wind.
This would completely shatter it.
Wind is in his face.
76 yards into the wind. Unimaginable. Janikowski puts it as hard as he can. He's not even going to make it to the goal line. This can be returned. Remember, Cromartie did this. He's going to act.
Of all the 561 field goals that the Bass ever attempted over the past two decades, in fact, of any field goal anybody has ever attempted, of any kick, any field goal on any level in the history of the world that anybody has ever attempted, none will ever top the 76-yarder that Lane Kiffin ran him out for, especially when the record for the longest kick ever was 13 yards less than that. Seabass could have told Kiffin to pound sand, knowing that that was a stunt and a middle finger to Al Davis to make a point about how bad that offense sucked. But he didn't. My man just threw on his bonnet, brought out his leg cannon, and essentially punted the rock 20 yards short of the crossbar. Seabass goes on to play 10 more years after that. Lane Kiffin went on to get fired with an overhead projector presentation. So now Tom Brady is the only guy left from the 2000 draft class. And speaking of that draft class, Al Davis was universally killed for taking Seabass number 17 overall with that first round pick. Got annihilated for that. But who's laughing now? Who's laughing now? Well, not Al. He's dead. But he would be, because Seabass went on to play 18 years with the Raiders and became their all-time leader in points scored. And it wasn't even close. Hell, Davis. Not only did Al not reach for the Bass at 17, dude got lucky. Lucky that he was even still there. You go to any GM right now and tell them that their all-time leading scorer will be available when they're on the clock. They're going to pull that trigger. Maybe even move up. Because not only was the Bass the leg of Raider Nation for two decades, I mean, he damn well was the face of the RN. There will never be another NFLer like Seabass. Never. And now that legend walks off the field like another all-time great. Another guy who is arguably the greatest ever at his position. Some would argue the greatest ever play football. And now the Bass walks off just like him. Another all-timer. Jerry Rice as a Seahawk. Don't forget about Franco Harris playing there too. From the soccer fields of Poland to the gridiron at Florida State to the black hole in Oakland to that ridiculously small and ill-fitting uniform in Seattle. The next stop for the Bass is Canton, Ohio. Just get this guy a mustard jacket in the right size because he deserves it. Damn it.
Bye, bye, little Sebastian. Miss you in the saddest fashion.
What an amazing career. What a dude. What a colorful character. We are joined by Golden State big man, Andrew Bogut. Andrew, it is so good to have you back. How are you?
Good. Yourself?
Man, I'm great. I am great. I want to get to the Rockets series and the playoffs in a moment, but it's been a little while since you and I have spoken. Bring me up to date. How are you? How is your life?
Going well. Settled in back to the NBA life after being in Australia for a season, so it's so far so good.
All right, so let me be honest. When you first signed with Golden State, I thought maybe there might be a little bit of rust for you to knock off, and then you'd be up to speed. But from the outside, it feels like you stepped right in and fit in immediately. What's it been like coming back to the team?
Yeah, it hasn't been too bad. Obviously, it's the same system as when I was here the first go around, so settling in wasn't too bad. Obviously, the pace of the game has definitely changed in the NBA the last couple of years, and the refereeing's obviously much tighter with hand checking and stuff like that. So that's been a little bit of an adjustment, but for the most part, it's been pretty seamless.
We're talking Andrew Bogut. I'll talk to you about the refereeing in a moment, but you know, when you look at the way the game has changed right now and the way it's being called right now, and then you look at the guys you're playing with. When you look at the guys that you were with for your first stint with the team, guys like Steph, Clay, and Draymond, do you notice any changes in them? And if so, what are they?
Not a whole lot. Obviously, you know, they're the most talented athletes in the world in this league, and then you throw Kevin Durant in that mix as well, and you've got a lot of guys that can get us a bucket when we need a bucket, a lot of guys that do different things on the court. But I haven't changed a whole lot. I think just the grind of these 3 or 4 or 5 years, actually, of just playing deep into June sometimes takes its toll, and we saw that in the regular season. It kind of, you know, the media said we looked bored at times and whatnot, but it's just a matter of getting through that grind and now getting to the playoffs, and now the real stuff starts.
We're talking to Andrew Bogut. So everybody there was really excited to see you come back, especially the guys in the poker games. But, Andrew, is it true that when Clay saw you, he just said, oh, hey, Bogues, like he just saw you a couple of days earlier instead of a few years earlier?
Yeah, pretty much. Clay probably didn't even know I was gone, to be quite honest with you. He probably realized, you know, once the media started talking about, like, wait, where'd you go? But that's Clay for you.
My God, that's the Andrew Bogut I know. Andrew Bogut joining us. There are all sorts of stories about the legendary poker games that include you and Steph and Draymond and Clay. I'm not going to ask you for details. I wouldn't do that. But what is Clay like as a poker player?
He's okay. I mean, he has his little runs, but if you know, if he looks out the window of the plane and there's a bird flying, he'll get distracted pretty easily. So he's, you know, he struggles to keep attention on the table a lot of the time, and sometimes forgets what he had in his hand and makes some loose calls. So he's done that a few times already, but he's getting a little bit better. But you know, with Clay, you just got to make sure that his attention is on the table.
We're talking Andrew Bogut. That does sound like Clay. Now, when you went back to Australia to play, you signed a two-year deal that had no NBA opt-outs. You're obviously somebody who's going to commit to something and commit fully. So at that point, did you think maybe you were done with the NBA?
Yeah, I did. Honestly, I wasn't actively throwing my name in the ring to come back to the NBA. It was a matter of Golden State reaching out to me, actually mid-season, when I was in the middle of my season in the NBL, and they wanted me to come over in December, and I said, look, I want to finish what I started here in Australia, and if you still have a roster spot when all said is done in February, March in the NBL is when our season ends, we can chat again. And they kept the roster spot open, and the team in Sydney obviously gave their blessing for me to come over here in the off season and play, which was great for everybody.
Andrew Bogut joining us. What about that team in Sydney? For instance, playing in Australia is different. There's a little more time to rest. Maybe you can mix in a beer or two. What was the experience like playing for the Sydney Kings?
It was great. It was really great. One or two games a week, so usually just on weekends. I got two young kids now, so the fact that I could be home basically every, you know, the weekdays and only be gone for one or two days on the weekend was great with young kids trying to be around at the most important time of their lives and obviously help the body. You know, 28 games in the regular season and then a couple of games in the finals, and the body feels much better than grinding through an 82-game NBA season.
All right, so I was going to ask you about the kids because you've got an infant and you've got a toddler, and obviously you go through something like that. It's going to change your perspective. How much has that changed your outlook both on life and on the game?
Yeah, you just don't stress about things as much because, you know, you get home and the kids don't care who you are. They don't care that you play basketball. They don't care that you what you're doing and who you've met and all that kind of stuff. They just kind of want you to feed them and change their diaper and put them to sleep. So it puts things into perspective for you, and it's great when you do have a stressful day, you come home and see them smiling and having a laugh. It really changes kind of what you value as stressful and important in life.
Andrew Bogut joining us. And then you've got issues like the things that happen on the floor. As an example, I would ask you, is basketball even more fun right now than maybe it was a few years ago? And especially how everything was after you suffered that brutal injury in Cleveland.
Yeah, no doubt. I think coming back for this second run with the Warriors, I think just the first time around when I was with the Warriors, I don't think I kind of appreciated being in the moment as much. Just because, you know, so much pressure and going to the finals 2 years in a row, winning one, losing one, I think I really didn't appreciate it and enjoy it as much as I should have. So when I came here, I kind of told myself, I really want to enjoy this and appreciate this. It's a very rare opportunity for a guy to have a chance to come back to a championship team that he once was with, and I just want to make sure that I cherish the moments and get as much enjoyment out of it as I can.
You've got a few more moments with Andrew Bogut. So you went through a tough Clippers team in the first round, and then you had that short turnaround for game one against Houston yesterday. How tough was that turnaround, and what do you make of the way everybody battled yesterday?
Oh, it was sensational. A few guys banged up. Obviously, Steph and Clay nursing some ankle injuries, so the fact that they got over the line and played influential roles for us. And I felt like, you know, even though it was an early game and a quick turnaround for us, I felt like the Clippers, you know, credit to them, they really, really played their best basketball against us. Doc was changing lineups all over the place, and it really prepared us for this series. So we felt like, even though it was a quick turnaround, we felt like we were in a good flow to just keep building on what we did last series.
You know, generally, you don't want to talk about the referees, but then again, the Rockets were talking about the referees afterwards. They had a lot of complaints. What was your reaction to their complaints?
Well, every possession, someone's getting what they think is a bad call, whether it's us or them. So it's going to continue throughout the playoffs. The referees are human. They make mistakes. But I feel like Steph, Clay, and Kev are getting banged up as much as James and Chris are. So I think it works both ways. Obviously, there were some missed calls on their end, and there were some missed calls on our end. But, you know, the big one is obviously the three-point shooting, and they feel like they're getting hit. But they got two guys on their team that do a fabulous job of drawing fouls and putting pressure on the referees. So the referees know that, and I guess they didn't give them the benefit of the doubt last night.
I think that's well said. Any idea, if you had to guess, how the referees approach game two?
I don't think it'll be a guess. I think it's going to be very, very tight, and I think there's going to be a lot of fouls called, and the game could go for about 5 hours probably. So that's kind of my prediction. A lot of pressure from you guys in the media, a lot of pressure around the NBA. I see Daryl Morey commenting, Mark Cuban, a lot of people are commenting, and the league's going to see it, and it's going to be, I think it's, you know, both teams will probably be in the bonus within the first 3 or 4 minutes of the first quarter.
Does the officiating seem any different to you than the last time you were in the NBA?
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, you can't touch anybody. Good defenders and defense has kind of gone out the window for scoring, which, you know, the NBA claims that the fans want to see more of. But a lot of the scoring now is just the guys standing at the free throw line. So I'm not sure if that's the right balance. But when I first came in the league, you know, Detroit Pistons had Ben Wallace, Rasheed Wallace, those kind of guys, and it was a rough and tough league where you had to play through a lot of contact and you'd be bruised and sore after a game. Where now it's the opposite. You don't even want to put a little scratch on somebody because you might get thrown out of a game. So it's definitely changed, and you just got to adjust your game to it.
So is it better or is it different now?
If you love scoring and love seeing a stat sheet that's in the 120s and 130s, it's better. If you're a basketball purist, I mean, it's arguable if it's better. It all depends on, I guess, it's beauty in the eye of the beholder, as they say, and this is a prime example of it. For me, I kind of like the balance of pure basketball, but, you know, some people like seeing a stat sheet and seeing outrageous stats, so it depends.
All right, so final thought. I know you've got a lot of work ahead of you. With respect to that, you've made it very clear since you came back. As fun as this all is, the goal certainly is to win another championship. Knowing everything that you have been through since the last one, how would it feel to win another one? How good would that be?
Oh, it'd be awesome. That's the reason why we play professional sports. If you're playing professional sports to just win a first-round playoff game or just make the playoffs or whatever it is, you're kind of playing for the wrong reasons. We're in this to win a championship just like everybody else that's remaining in the playoffs, and if I can get another one, I'll take it.
He's already an NBA champion. He was the first pick overall in 2005 out of Utah. The MVP of the NBL, Andrew Bogut. Andrew, so good to have you back. Appreciate you, and I appreciate the conversation, man. Thank you.
You going to come out to the game in Houston?
I wasn't planning on coming to Houston, but if I can get on that Andrew Bogut jet, I might come out. You know, a beer or two after.
With Toby.
Toby. Can you get Toby to come?
Well, that's your guy. Give him a buzz. Give him a call, and you can sit courtside and have a few beers, kick a few back, and enjoy the game.
Dude, you're such a legend. I'll tell you what. If I can hook Toby up, I will certainly be there courtside, knocking back beers, and we'll toast to you.
No worries.
You're the best, mate.
Good to talk to you.
All right, Andrew. Good job. In fact, such an amazing job. I'm so hyped that he went there. Andrew Bogut, 9 years after the Toby reference. You have to understand how absolutely unbelievable that is.
Larry Brown.
Literally, Benny, you're the rare guy that I would interrupt a take or a rant for to get to the phone call. What's up, Ben?
Oh, I'm honored. Thanks, man. I appreciate that. Hey, quick shout out to the new bald guy, Vin Weasel, behind the glass. Congrats on the new gig. Now, I can't see behind the table, but does the studio allow for enough room for your wheelchair, Professor X? I heard someone refer to you as Michael Stipe earlier. That's not really fair or nice, but it is good to have some new shiny, happy people on staff, isn't it? And I have no idea what your name is, but between your chrome dome and your department store brand outfit, you should probably change it to Michael Jordache. Mr. Rome, as usual, I cannot wait to wreck everyone come June 21st. So put me down for a yes on my RSVP for the 25th anniversary of the Smack-Off. And War Caleb in Green Bay putting his usual effort into producing an over-the-top RSVP to the Smack-Off this year, Russell Wilson style, talking all slow and sultry from his bed right next to his lover, Sierra. Missed and wore the new guy's head looking like both of Britney Spears' hairdos in the early 2000s. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Atta kid, Benny Rackham. See you on June 21st, Ben. Benny in Wisco. Let's go to Matt in LA. Matt, dude, how was the Nooch Fest?
Romulus James, hey man, take a bow, Jimmos, because that thing was, like you like to say, epic. From Laguna Beach to Louisiana, Lafayette to Laos. From Arkansas, Little Rock to Alamitos Bay to Antarctica. You're welcome, CBS Sportsnet. Your boy Matt in LA's montage is getting some new clone clout with the likes of Nooch, Silk Bra, Shea from the Bay, Beaks, Benton, the CEO, Randall and Flowers. Yeah! Clone Stock SoCal was the bomb, Jimmy. The Jungle Stoner's journey to the OC beaches was capped off by a rooftop party full of classy people that you call clones talking sports, smack, and life. It's just a good group of people, Romy, and that's the jungle, man. I want to thank you for bringing us all together. But props to Ross on using the jungle as a springboard and sticking around to train Judge Mills Lane in his latest endeavor. But, my man, even Pete Rose as a Montreal Expo and J.R. Redneck as an L.A. Dodger think you didn't warm that seat up, man. Just let our dude, the principal from back to school, know that this is the jungle, and he's going to even get some slack from time to time. That's all I got, Jim. Where irate Craig stealing Eric and Orlando's live bait for meals, worn Matt pastry dish catching insects in his barbed wire beard, and unwore anybody to talk smack on Clone Fest. Outro.
I'm going to rack him. Go ahead and rack him. Save that phone call. You may hear that back at the top of the hour. Matt in L.A.
Good night now!